Of the legendary Lou Gellerman. Hello, dog fans, and welcome to the Sound the Siren podcast, because everything matters, including being natty bound, chasing number 15, to pay homage, among others, to the forerunner to Big Play JP, Big Play Jermaine, number 15 Jermaine Curse. We're natty bound, you dogs will be in Houston in full force, purple raining all over the state of Texas, as it did this past Monday night. I am your host, Hooligan7. If you're watching this on YouTube for the first time, welcome. This is what some of us look like, but you've probably seen our faces before on Washington Wednesdays. I'm Hooligan7. I'm joined tonight by Johnny Tugs, J-Cap, Hood Husky, who signed in tonight as Beat Michigan. How are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Excellent. Go dogs.
Fantastic. Can't be bad when we're heading to the Natty.
Feeling good, dog. Feeling good.
Yep. Rest in peace to basically all of Duck Twitter's narratives.
Dude, rest in peace to all of Duck Twitter. I mean, I don't know if you've been seeing what's been happening the last 24 hours, but...
I'm going to mention that we're going to have a very special segment.
Oh, boy.
Maybe not stupid tweets, but epically amazing tweets. Featuring one of Hood's former nemesis. Nemesises, or whatever.
Nemesi.
But before we go any further, we got to touch on beverages. Tugs, what do you got tonight, buddy?
I'm drinking some Basil Hayden neat.
Nice. Keeping it classy. J-Cap, how about you, sir?
I'm on some strawberry lemonade kombucha tonight.
Ooh, nice. Nice. The probiotic. Hood, what do you got, dude?
He said a probiotic. I got a peach old fashioned.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Yeah,
Sursky. Nice. I see that.
I'm bougetto tonight.
Nice. Yeah, you definitely have if you've gone more bougie than me. I'm starting the evening on, I'm done with my mostly dry December, and I have from I think it's Cascade Crafted is the name of the brewery, and it indeed it is. It's pouring one out, but not really. Pouring one a sip at a time. A Country Boy IPA to, you know, cheers to you country boys that got your asses handed to you in the Superdome past Monday night. So it's nice, and then I'll probably have I've got an athletic run just to keep it. I've got an early morning, so there it is. So in this segment, which is usually stupid tweets, we can do some stupid tweets if you guys have some, but I do want to give some credit to some amazing tweets. And Owen at OwenTooElve is absolutely on one. So yeah, go check that out, because wow. We broke Duck Twitter.
Yeah, they're burning down.
Well, Owen kind of had the whole thing leading up to the game this past Monday when he kept posting about me if Washington wins on Monday, all that kind of stuff. So it was bound to happen. I just didn't think it was going to burn down like this. And then seeing him and Go Ducks and all these other fans interacting with Nick Pickett and Javon Holland, Jordan Scott, saying that UW is nice and they're picking them to win the Natty is fucking hilarious.
They're fighting with their own. You know you're down bad when players that have actually put on for your school are like calling you idiots. So
down bad,
down awful, or as Charles Barkley would say, down terrible.
Ernie, terrible.
What did Key say? He goes, "We are a loser program. UW just did everything in one season
garbage.
What we've done in our
garbage.
Whole lifetime.
That's in garbage."
I didn't know Key was on the podcast tonight.
That was hilarious.
I will say shouts to all the Texas fans in terms of just a whole selection of stupid tweets. Like, I think it's like Rude Wayne or whatever his name was that thought like that they were going to have like an all time offensive performance.
Man, that was a rough one.
Yeah. So there's that. Well, any other stupid tweets or should we just talk about what we got to experience this past Monday night? Yeah. So Monday night, I will say now, and you know, kind of just the how it feels and the experience of it. I literally was shaking and on the verge of tears after Elijah batted that pass away. And the one other thing before we kind of dive deep into the recap, obviously Elijah has had some up and downs, some ups and downs this year, and had some criticism probably unfairly thrown in his direction. But the size of the dog in that guy to make that play to send us to the national championship game, Elijah Jackson is a Husky legend, period. The size of the dog in Elijah is bigger than the continent of Australia.
Big facts, man. And you guys, you know, that's just the nature of playing corner, bro. Like, you know, there's so many ups and downs, and you get an opportunity to make a play like that. You guys see juice afterwards. And obviously, Mikhail had to hype him up. Like, he was like, you know, I make jokes like it was like Talladega Nights. He's like, what do I do with my hands? Like, Elijah just didn't know how to respond to the moment. And it was crazy because it's like, you know, obviously all the, you know, the outpouring of people have been kind of mentioning his name in regards. Oh, they mentioning Jabbar and this, that, and the other, but haven't been mentioning him. And then, you know, I love seeing Juice Brown grab him and being like, do you know what you just did, bro? Like, do you know what you just did? You know, so I'm pretty sure after the game, it all settled in when he got the post on Instagram and all that kind of stuff. But in the moment, you know, it was really interesting to see, you know, him take a big, you know, natural sigh of relief. But overall, man, pass defense played out of their minds. If it wasn't for that last drive, a couple big plays, some pass plays, you know, they would have been under two.
Little bit of a push off there.
Oh, a little bit, a lot of bit. They would have been under 300 Hella. Yards passing. They only had 180 yards rushing, which, you know, sounds like a lot to other people, but we've seen Oregon, you know, put up 250, you know what I'm saying, and have far more success. Also, too, the run defense, what's part of run defense is turning the ball over. So you can get 6, 7, 8, 12 yards on a play if you want, but if we force a fumble, that's run defense. So
yep.
And that's how our defense showed up.
Absolutely, and flipping the turnover margin back after the unfortunate muff from Jeremy in the first half. Yeah, I will say, speaking of Talladega, I think Mikhail might have set a speed record at that particular racetrack with how fast he got across the field to Elijah to celebrate.
That was insane, dude, to be honest with you. Unbelievable. Fastest like he ever run in his life.
Bro, he wasn't even on the play.
Right.
And that man got to the opposite sideline, bro. That was crazy. Yeah. Ball didn't even touch the ground yet.
Yep.
Was that last drive where that big they got that big play? Was that on Elijah Jackson where he got jacked in the back?
No, that was one other thing that was on Jabbar for Elijah to come back after they beat our number one guy big play was another factor in that last moment that I think hasn't really gotten talked about too much is the wherewithal to know that they're going to come at you in that spot multiple times, because they did throw that fade ball twice on that four play sequence at Elijah, and to just stick with it and trust himself to make that play was awesome, especially right after watching Jabbar get kind of skied over for a huge play on that drive.
Yeah.
Also,
go ahead, Hood. Sorry.
Oh, well, just also too, just in relation to pass defense, one thing I was concerned about was, you know, JT Sanders, you know what I mean, having a big game, and Dom and Cam Fab were on him all game. For the most part, it was Dom, and it was mano a mano, you know, and there were a couple, like, pass deflections that Dom had. There was a couple times where he was physical at the point of attack, and, you know, JT wasn't able to make the play. So all the hate, you know, our pass defense got, They stepped up in every single way that you can in regards to pass defense. Braylon Trice with the pass rush. Linebackers guarding the running backs. Safeties guarding the tight ends. And the corners guarding the receivers. Like, they stepped up in every facet of pass defense. And you'll still hear, well, your pass defense was trash versus Michigan. Who doesn't pass the ball? So I'm waiting to see it.
Yeah, I agreed. I will say one thing, and like, and I'm glad I haven't seen it. I've seen a little bit of it in terms of stupid tweets, but not a ton of Texas fans belly aching about the officiating in terms of the penalty margins. Go back and watch the tape. Braylon Trice gets absolutely mugged double-digit times with no call. So we're being joined now by...
There were a couple on... go ahead, Jacob. I was just going to say, to your point, there were a couple on interior guys, too. You saw Thule and Tui both get held pretty egregiously on one of Ewer's scrambles up the middle, which I believe, I might be wrong, believe was on a third down conversion. Yeah, it's good to, like you said, not see a lot of Texas fans belly aching about officiating.
They were low-key just letting them ball out on both sides for sure. And it's so funny, whenever you let Washington just play on offense and defense, you see what happens. And I think that's a little bit of the, you know, I'm not going to say it was intentional in the Pac-12, but can you imagine if they allowed us not to have all the bullshit pass interferences? And a lot of these games wouldn't have been fun. They wouldn't have been these 10 or less games at all. Like, if they called the pushoffs at USC multiple times for touchdowns, you know, if they didn't call some of those PIs on, you know, some of our DBs, especially versus Utah, like, how would those would have played out? So I think whenever you allow us to play ball, both games versus Oregon, game versus Texas, you people see what happened.
Yep, absolutely. Other things that stood out to you Monday night, like I said, I mean, just the experience of it, I was shaking. Just briefly to step away from the micro focused on the game and the macro of the fan experience and where we are as a, you know, what we've gone through as a fan base. I mean, we were 0-12 15 years ago.
Dude, we lost to Montana 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I was about to bring that up. You say you want to talk about how far we've come as a fan base. How about how far we've come as a group on this podcast? The first game after we started this podcast was Montana.
And sorry.
2 years after that, here we are.
Cincinnati, baby.
It's unreal.
That's
absolutely like incredible.
Kalen DeBoer is him.
Mm-hmm. Pay that man.
I was about to say.
He's waiting to win a natty so he can get his price up.
Announce his contract extension when he's standing at the podium at the fucking check. White House.
Get him at a blank check.
Or with like, or bring the Natty trophy with it, with his contract in the check.
Swear to God, if we win the Natty and George Kliavkov is standing at the fucking podium.
He won't.
He was there at the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, but it'll probably be, it should be crap, I can't remember his name, the Big Ten.
What's the Big Ten commissioner's name? I don't know.
Yeah,
Warren, Kevin Warren, something Warren, maybe.
No,
something
it's
like
not
that.
Kevin Warren. He's with the Bears now. That's who it was. Shit, I can't remember his name now. Anyway,
players of the game.
Other... What
players of the game from Monday? Mike. Well, yeah,
Michael Penix
Jr., Braylon Trice. I mean, they already did it for us, but
I mean, Rome,
Elijah
JP,
Jackson.
Elijah, I mean, so many. But
Parker Brailsford.
Facts. Facts.
Yeah, Don Loki a great Ryan shot Grubb. Yeah, but we have seen great, great elite level quarterback play from Mike Penix for 2 years. He was on in another universe Monday night. Like that one, get rid of the ball and spin away from it. Like that is just, well, and the touchdown to J-Mac.
Oh, was insane.
seven different kinds of flames were coming off the back of that ball.
Yeah.
That shit was insane, dude.
Yeah. No, like it was, there was a tweet, like, you know, I don't remember whose tweet it was a couple of days ago where they were talking about, you know, like, or it was like, a decent quarterback can hit a door from 30 yards away. A great quarterback can hit the doorknob. Michael Penix can hit the keyhole.
Was that Acho? I think it was Emmanuel Acho.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was Emmanuel Acho, and shouts to that, because that was...
Dude's got some wild takes, but he was on the nail with that one.
Dude, the best part is I had my buddies from the East Coast texting me, and like, dude, Michael Penix is so unreal. And I'm like, I've been trying to fucking tell you. I've been trying to tell you for 2 years now.
And the bigger the stage is, the better he plays. And that just makes me more confident for Monday.
Yep. I've got a comment in a tweet and a GC comment that's coming in some of these national GCs, including this one that we've been talking about with some Michigan fans. I'm sitting on it until Monday night, but stay tuned.
Let's go. Dude, let's go.
ESPN Booger needs to learn ball, man. Holy cow. Big boy football, basketball on grass.
Woo. Yeah, he needs to learn football for many different reasons, but he ranked the four Final Four teams as Texas, Bama, Michigan, Washington. So it's pretty impossible to be that wrong, but he found a way. So Anchorman line? I'm not even mad. I'm just impressed.
Yeah, I mean, shouts to Josh Pate. Shouts to, like, Brandon Walker about, like, yep. For owning it. Up and be like, yeah. I was wrong. I still want Josh Pate to pick Michigan, but
yeah,
well, lean into the model, Josh. Lean into the model.
Hey, right shit. Lean into them models, man. Paper football, love it.
He's got Oregon favored on a neutral site over Michigan and Washington this weekend.
What are we gonna play in Switzerland? Shouts to Oregon winning a Fiesta Bowl, and yeah, against a team that didn't belong there in the first place, but hey, there you go.
True.
Like most of their bowl games.
Also true.
All right, anything else we want to talk about looking back at the Sugar Bowl and adding another one? Horns down, dogs up, you got us?
Said nope.
I think that's the Darker Night, but it doesn't look like we got audio, so...
I was impressed with Dom's game. He had some big stops. He played phenomenal, I thought. Like, I feel like he really stepped up his game this for the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, on what Hood said about JT Sanders, that was a matchup that we heard about all week coming into the game. And outside of that last drive, you didn't really see much out of him. You saw him get blown up on a screen to the outside, but other than that, you didn't really hear his name called all that much. So I mean, I don't know who they're gonna pick for this game on Monday. But whoever it is, better hope that they come ready for it.
Our offensive line looks so nice, dude. Sweat and Murphy didn't even get. I think there was like one play in the first quarter where Penix had to like dodge one of them diving or something like that. But dude, our offensive line is so nice. They're so good.
And shouts again to Dylan. Like, he is a pass pro machine. Like, he's a huge part of what we do. You know, it sounds like he's going to be a go on Monday, which is huge for us. And like Michigan, should we move on to talk about Michigan or like any other thoughts either about the game in specific or your experience after it ended and like how you felt?
I felt like my heart was going to burst through my chest with 1 second on the clock.
I was laying on the ground, bro. Like looking at the ground, my hands on my head. Like, come on, how did this happen? But overall, man, I think the biggest thing that I got from it is, you know, people want to talk about, you know, basketball on grass and all this kind of stuff. We will play whatever form of ball you want to play. Those boys ran the ball at Sweat to prove a point. We didn't care about – I initially was like, oh, we're going to go heavy screen. We're going to run outside the tackles. They said, F that. We don't care who your big dudes are. We're running straight at them. And while they weren't successful, it just tells you the type of moxie and the type of balls that this team has, the offensive line, as well as the offensive coordinator and DeBoer, like, to create a game plan where you're running at their best players. You know, so I felt like that was really cool. And it makes me, like, assume that we're going to do the same thing versus Michigan. And then the final thing I'll say is, you know, this is week, what, 14, 15. And Chuck Morrell came out in a defensive front that we haven't seen all season. You know what I mean? Three down linemen with two edges. You know, we haven't seen that alignment all season. And he decided to bring that after being prepared or whatnot. So there's no telling what type of things we're going to, you know, employ versus Michigan. We didn't run any of, like, the end around stuff, but we ran a lot of the formations and a lot of the actions. Mm-hmm. So they got to prepare for both things. I can't imagine, you know, being their defensive coordinator, was a mentor. I can't imagine being their defensive coordinator, man, going into this game, you know, not knowing what we can do out of the same set, same formation.
Well, and speaking of that, who was probably our most effective runner in the game on set on Monday?
Michael Penix Jr.
Mike and then Tybo 1B.
Mike.
Definitely Mike
with a bullet.
Mike.
Definitely like, with a bullet.
Yeah, like, and that's just another thing the defense is going to have to think about.
Something, yeah, Hooligan, we didn't do all season.
For 2 years.
For two years, bro.
We did not run Mike.
Crazy.
They ran him a little bit in the conference championship game, but not like this.
But they saw that. They saw that Dylan Gabriel game plan, and it was like, hey, man, Dylan Gabriel, like, ran a lot of quarterback draws, a lot of quarterback powers, and then scramble drilled, you know, for first downs and things like that. So they saw the opening, and I was, like I told a lot of Texas fans, it isn't about how many yards you run for. It's about being forced to respect the run game. If I can knock off a 12-yard run, you need to respect it. If just because you're giving me one here, two there, one there, tackle for loss, and I bust off 12 just off some misdirection, or it's a backup running back, or it's the quarterback, now you're like, damn, I got a key on that, or that could be a bigger explosive than 12. So, like, you got to respect the run game, too.
Doing the rush 3, drop 8, or rush 4, drop 7. Try it. Try it. Because I guarantee you, like, Michigan, as good as they are, and they are a very, very good defense. I don't want to not let, let's kind of move it. We can talk and move into the Michigan preview. They're a good defense. They're a better defense than we've played this year. But, and where this is where kind of a style makes a great game kind of thing, is that we haven't seen a defense like Michigan's. They haven't seen an offense like ours. And, like, I, you know, and I've said it, like, oh, you know, it happened in a couple of places where, like, oh, you know, why doesn't somebody try the ASU? Why doesn't, you know, why aren't people trying the 8-gap blitz like ASU did? Because Jalen McMillan is healthy. There was a lot of reward to spam that when you didn't have the risk of our middle of the field explosive athlete cooking your ass for it. J-Mac is exactly full back. Go ahead. Spam that 8-gap blitz.
And you can't just...
You're going to empty space for J-Mac, for Westy, for Dev, and Dylan out of the backfield. Okay. Do it.
Appreciate it. And look, Texas, one thing you heard me say pregame was, and you heard me say it all the time, the one tendency that I noticed on offense and defense that traveled with them, that was very consistent, was how fast they played. On defense, they are an extremely fast defense. Michigan is not a fast defense. So when it comes to rallying and stuff, you got a bunch of motor guys, but you can outrun these linebackers. You're not outrunning Anthony Hill and Jalen Ford. You know what I mean? You can outrun Sane Ristill. You can outrun number 9. You know what I mean? The opposite corner side, Will Johnson, isn't the fastest or the twitchiest guy. You can outrun these guys. You couldn't outrun Texas. So,
yeah, you're right. I mean, but like, and here's the other element that I don't think that a lot of fans on that side of things realize is like, oh, you know, we're the best defense, blah, 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 blah. And they execute and they're very, very fundamentally sound and they're very technique sound. But look at that rock the baby catch that Rome made down the sideline in the second half where he was right in front of the Pat McAfee. Like, the Texas defensive back had picture perfect position. and the combination of Mike's pinpoint deep ball accuracy and Rome's ability to make catches even when well covered meant an explosive game for Washington.
That's what I saw. I heard somebody say today, they were like, Texas's coverage wasn't bad. No. It's just like Penix was just like dropping balls where the other team.
And
the fact on that catch you're talking about to Rome, they were saying how he didn't bring his hands up until he absolutely had to. And the Texas DB had no idea where the ball was. You could he turned way late when the ball was already in Rome's hands.
Yeah, like and Rome, like to your point, like Rome didn't put his hands up, but like basically as soon as Rome put his hands up, there was the ball.
Yep.
Like it's like go back to the throw that he made into double coverage in the conference championship game with Rome to the right sideline. It's like two guys in pretty good, like both of them playing pretty good coverage, and Mike just throws a dude open anyway. It doesn't matter.
Dude, Rome is
they
so...
say it oftentimes when you're talking about a perfect throw like that. You can't walk the ball down there and put it in his hands any better than he threw it.
Right. Like,
it's literally pinpoint perfect where Rome's making that play or nobody is.
Look at the athleticism on JP's touchdown. Look at the closing speed of that defensive back who didn't end up getting his hands on the ball. Because it impacted JP catching it, but that was another piss missile from Mike, and it hit off of JP's hands, deflected up into the air, and JP just kept going in stride and caught it in the end zone. This team's not going to get run. I'm sorry, but it's just not going to get like. Can Michigan win this football game on Monday? Whoa. Absolutely.
This 100%. They have a shot to do it for sure,
but Washington has an equal shot to beat them. Washington, like, this is going to be a heck of a football game.
Yeah.
Both
Michael Penix in a dome. Take all my money.
That's exactly. If we were playing this in last weekend's weather in Pasadena, before that, like, Monday was a great day in Pasadena. The rest of the weekend was not. That would be huge advantage to Michigan. This team in a dome stadium?
On turf?
Yeah.
Bro, I just don't see it close. Like, I don't, like, I can look at it as many ways as I want to look at it, you know. It's easier for us to stop their running game and commit to their running game than it is for them to commit to our pass game. So at the end of the day, like, it's tough for me to even see them even, you know, being, you know, I've been saying Oregon both times, Texas should be two possession games. This is two plus, in my opinion. You know, they're not going to be able to ball control and run the ball, and they're not going to be able to in my opinion. So
it's all game flow. For Michigan to win this football game, they have to establish the run early. They have to be leading or within a touchdown for the entire length of the game. If you make, like, if there's a situation where if this game starts like the conference championship game did, Michigan does not have, I would be like, Roman Wilson is a stud. He is a good receiver, but they don't have Tez Johnson, like, and Cornelius Johnson is good, but they don't have the Tez Johnsons, the Trayshawn Holden, or the Holdens, the even the Turd Fergusons. They
it's just
don't
one
have that. And JJ and above all, and I can't believe I'm gonna say this, but I actually grown to respect Bo Nix. JJ McCarthy is not Bo Nix by any stretch of any imagination. If Washington gets up 10 to 14 points early in this game, we get a couple of three and outs, and we go down and put touchdowns on the board, and you make Michigan chase. That's a bad, bad recipe for Michigan.
It is much easier for them to get blown out. Like, if they have one thing go wrong on offense, the game is over. If one person gets hurt, if they – because if you look at Texas's first, like, you know, few possessions, a lot of it is punt, punt, touch, or like punt, punt, touchdown, punt, fumble, punt, punt, fumble, touchdown. So it's like, you guys, I want to say it's like four or five of the first seven drives, like they scored twice, maybe twice in a field goal. You, bro, that 17 points ain't getting you nowhere. You know what I'm saying?
You know, you mean against Bama? Michigan against Bama?
I was actually talking about the Texas game. So just talking about our defense, you know what I mean? So just speaking of our defense and how it plays, like if that happens against Michigan, where, you know, we stop them, you know, they score on one of their first four drives, because it's hard to keep, you know, pounding the rock. Okay, it's third and four. You run the ball again. It's hard to maintain. That's not an efficient way to play ball. You know, all it takes is for us to stop them once or twice in the first half, first quarter, and they're down 14-0, 10-0, 14-3, so.
Yeah, provided we're not turning the ball over. That was the only reason the game was tied at halftime, was that, unfortunately, Jeremy's muff. Like, that's they have to establish the run early and be in the game. I mean, and they can do it. They are they're an exceptional running team. They're going to give us some looks. I've said it, like, as has been the case basically every game all year, this is going to be tight in the first half. We're going to be tearing our hair out a little bit about, like, why isn't the defense stopping this? We see this coming, you know, what's going on? And then the second half's going to come around and the defense is going to buckle some things down. Like, to get a pass, any kind of passing game going against Alabama, they had to do that crazy trick reverse play or whatever, you know, that the trick play. And credit to J.J. McCarthy, he made a hell of a catch to make that play work.
If that's what you're relying on, bro, like, that's, like, even still, they had to, like, get Roman Wilson, like, in an ideal matchup versus a linebacker as a wing player at the goal line. Like, you got to do all this stuff to score 7 points. All I got to do is throw the ball up to Roman Wilson, say, Jalen Pope, you got to do all this extra schematic misdirection, Challenger keys, all this extra stuff for 6 points. Like, you struggle. Anyway, yeah, it's going to be easy, bro.
Just to go off of what Hooligan was just saying, that about the first half, we're going to be tearing our hair out and just stressing, and then the second half, we're going to lock down. I saw a tweet before the game. The most fourth quarter points scored against us this year was Cal. I think it was 13. Texas just scored 10 against us. And they had 10 the whole half. They didn't score in the third quarter. So, like,
and our second half defense Michigan's is offense, but they don't have Xavier Worthy. They don't have Adonai Mitchell. They don't have Jordan Whittington. They don't have Tavion Sanders. Like, they don't have those athletes.
No.
And they don't have Quinn. I mean, Quinn had an up and down game, but he's been pretty money in some clutch situations. JJ McCarthy is not Quinn Ewers.
I was talking earlier today with friend of the pod, shout out UW, about this kind of exact thing. It's like, if Texas finds himself in a situation where they're down two scores early, they're not built to come back and score quickly to get themselves back into the game. They're not an Oregon. They're not a Texas that have the firepower to be able to score on multiple possessions like those teams can. So, I mean, if like you pointed out earlier, Hooligan, if we get into a situation where it's like the conference championship game, a 17-0, 17-3 lead is basically blouses at that point. Like, it's over for Michigan. There's not.
Short
not
of
a situation
short
where,
of like a Blake Corum explosive,
right.
That's like,
or
that's
short of a turnover for a touchdown, like if someone fumble recovery touchdown, interception return touchdown. Those are the only two things, or maybe a kick return touchdown. But
I'm still waiting. I've been calling for it. I'm still waiting. Like, with how we come down the field on kick return, on kick coverage.
That is one thing that I will give Texas some props on. Mm-hmm. They played the kick game or kick coverage game really well.
Hell yeah. They were getting a lot of yards
on those kick returns, more than we're accustomed to seeing. I saw more drives start at the past the 20 30. Than we have all season long.
It kind of caught Tristan Dunn off guard a little bit. Like, he was like, damn, man, I can't just blow this dude up. Like, he didn't even go down. You can see him kind of get up like, what the hell was that?
Didn't they say on the broadcast we were fourth in the country in kickoff return?
In kickoff return yards allowed, yeah.
Considering we kicked the ball off a lot, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they totally took our kick return game away. And that's Daniel Ngata's niche that he carved for himself, and he had zero impact on the game just because they found a way, kept kicking out of the back of the end zone and didn't allow him the opportunity to return anything.
Now, a huge element of this is going to be, you know, how DJ is feeling for sure. I'll discuss that too. Like Tybo, maybe Richard Newton stepping in.
Yep.
More so than the run game is the pass protection game with Michigan's defensive line. Dylan is head and shoulders above anybody else on our team in the running back room as far as pass protection is concerned.
Newton's that guy too a little bit, but he's not threatening.
He is. Yeah, exactly. If you bring him in, there's no question what's about to happen. They're not going to hand him the ball. They gave him the ball one time in the Apple Cup for 1 yard, and Dylan was playing on half a leg. So if Richard Newton comes into the game, you know what he's there for, and you're giving Michigan a little bit of an advantage, knowing a little bit of what's coming their way, unless you do some sort of jet sweep action or something like that, or run the Wildcat with Deg Newton in there. But Dylan's injury impact is going to be on that pass protection more so than the running game, in my opinion.
God, yep. Put Bernard back there.
Thanks for joining us, Ed. Yeah, it's – and by the way, we will be back with a second pod a little later this week for our compadres that couldn't make it tonight. I will not be appearing on that one. I have other obligations the evening of our second recording, but – all right, let's anything else we want to talk? I mean, like, again, this is all to me, it's a game flow game. It's how this game starts. If we get out of the gates quick and Michigan doesn't, that might be pretty close to all she wrote. If Michigan can ground and pound and just gash us on the ground and keep the offense off the field a fair amount, it's going to be we're a better, the one thing I will say is we're in a better position to chase a game than they are by orders of magnitude. So is it all she wrote if Michigan is up early?
No.
No. Is it ideal for us? No. But because they, you know, the pass rush will tee off, they'll probably, you know, the offense may become a little bit more one-dimensional. We've seen that a number of times this season. But yeah, it's all right. Let's get into it. Predicted players of the game in the national championship game Monday night.
It's Michael Penix Jr. It has to be Michael Penix Jr. for this magnitude of a game. And like I mentioned earlier, the bigger the stage, the brighter he shines. In all of our biggest games this year, all of the
same with prime time.
Exactly.
Let's not twist it.
Ryan Grubb will get the 1B player of the game, in my opinion. But yeah, it's Michael Penix Jr., and it's not remotely close. I mean, you can give the receivers all their love, all their due, which they deserve, but it's Michael Penix Jr. It's not remotely close.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How about
defensively, I mean, it's hard to go with anyone other than Braylon.
Yeah.
If you're going to say not Braylon, I might go Jabbar. I think Jabbar will have a big game here.
That's obviously what Tugs was said. Are you going to agree with him or you got another one?
Tugs? No, I'll agree with him. I'll agree with him. Yeah, right. If we're not going trice, I'll agree. Yeah, Jabbar will be it.
With what Michigan likes to do, I think the player of the game for the Washington Huskies on the defensive side of the ball is a young man whose dad, I believe, was a freshman the last time we played Michigan with a title on the line for the University of Washington.
Okay, I see where you're going here.
And that's Mr. Carson Bruner.
Let's go.
Carson's going to have a big game helping contain the Michigan rushing attack, and I definitely could see in the scenario, you know, the game flow hypothetical, if Michigan's chasing the game and JJ's four, and the game goes to, you know, JJ McCarthy throwing it 30 to 35 times trying to catch us, Carson's going to get one, I think. But yeah, I agree. I think there, and then definitely Mike on the offensive side of the ball. And I do think they have a very fundamentally very good and very strong defense. I don't think we're going to see quite the offensive explosion that we saw against Texas. But I think where it really is going to, after Mike, where I think this game is going to be really won and lost for us, and where we, if things go our way, we're going to make some hay in the middle of the field. But I think it's not necessarily as much J-Mac. I could see this being a pretty big Dev Culp game, as well as even a little DJ out of the backfield are kind of the two under the radar, make some key plays guys.
How are we comparing Michigan's offensive line to Texas's offensive line?
I think they're comparable. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think they're missing they're still missing Zach Zinter, who's probably their best lineman, who's a guard that got hurt late in the year. I mean, this is a very talented football team, and they are very, very well coached. Do I think that necessarily are they maybe the pure athletes that Texas has? No. I think they're probably maybe a little better coached than Texas's offensive line, but I also, J-Cap, to your point about Braylon, Braylon's a different cat. He is a different animal. And he's one of the best pass rushers in the country. And the element where we have to be very, very responsible in containing their rushing attack. And so we can't just, unless we're in that situation where we're up 17-3, we can't just ad nauseum, okay, Pinner's back and let's get up the field. Let's get up the field. Let's get up the field. The other thing I'll say is certainly a big piece of this is also in terms of containing that rushing attack. It's MJ Ale. And it's Thule.
Yeah.
D tackle performance in this game is huge.
Yeah.
And those guys have played pretty well.
Dude, Corum's not very big.
He's not, but he's tough. Like, he's tough. Yeah. He's shifty. He's,
yeah.
And he's hard to bring down.
Kind of reminds
but
me.
But I think the other underrated element of this is, yes, like, and as much as like the defense gets disrespected, it's actually according to the beta rank, UW's actually the number 28 beta rank defense in the country. And we're not actually I think our pass rank is 29th and our rush rank is against the rush, we're 28th. We're pretty balanced. Like, Michigan's the number one beta rank defense in the country.
Oh.
But we're not as bad as some would have you believe. And particularly, I think that shows up. I think if they broke down those metrics first half to second half, I think we'd be significantly down that list in the first half and further up that list in the second. I mean, we've played some, is Michigan a better running game than we've played? Yes. But have we pretty well contained some pretty damn good running teams?
Yeah, what'd Bucky do?
Not much. Jordan James hurt us a little bit. But
how did Martinez do against us? I can't remember.
Not much.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, enough, but not enough. But yeah, so all right, should we do score predictions? Or do either of you gentlemen have anything further to say in general about this one, or we just do score predictions and call it a good?
I've got my score locked, ready to go.
All right. Tugs, you got one?
Give me a second to think about this one.
All right. Well, then, J-Cap, you can take first crack at this one.
I'm going to go 35-21 Dogs. Ooh. I think I think we get a one possession lead going into halftime, one touchdown. I think like you said, we might be pulling our hair a little bit with why it's a little closer than we think it should be. A couple plays here and there. Corum, I think Corum has 2 touchdowns in this game. But I think that we open it up in the second half. And as per usual, our defense tightens up in the third and fourth quarter. Mike, obviously, I think is going to have a big game here. I think that we're going to see a lot of J-Mac in this game. Rome and Polk got the bulk of the yards in this past Monday's game, but I think this Monday will be a bigger J-Mac game.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's a great point, because I do think they're really strong. Like, their first and second kind of corners are very fundamentally sound. But where our offense really stresses defenses is that you have to have 3 really good corners and your linebackers have to cover.
Your
safeties have to cover like madmen.
Real quick, on the Damian Martinez production in the game against us, he went 26 for 123 and 2 touchdowns. So he did a lot.
he did okay.
Yeah, he did. He did. The problem was that they couldn't pass the ball at all. And Michigan presents a different problem, but Roman Wilson is also not a giant. Like, he's not a shrimp like the Oregon State receivers, and JJ will be more accurate than DJ was.
But all their wide receivers are short, right? They're not tall like that Adonis cat.
I was just looking at their roster. They got a couple 5'11 guys, but most of them are 6 foot, 6'1". So they're not like small, but they're not big guys.
Yeah. But they're not the same kind of matchup problems in Adonai Mitchell and JT Sanders and
Worthy.
Jordan Whittington.
Yeah.
So we've got to mind the ground game more. And I think Corum's going to get his yards. I think Donovan Edwards is going to get his yards.
Yep.
But we also tend to buckle down in the red zone a little bit. And like, they're relying. That's one of the things that I'm laughing about, is that I've a bunch of the Michigan fans in this GC are like, oh, you're going to get a ton of yards, 20-20, and then we're going to buckle you down in the red zone where you're only the 61st best offense in the country. I'm like, tell me you don't watch Washington. Like, yes, we get in the red zone and we've been pretty effective there as time has worn on, but we score a decent. I don't have the stats in front of me. I would be very interested to see how many touchdowns we score. How many of our touchdowns were red zone touchdowns this year and how many were not?
Oh. Also, yes. they admitted that they don't watch Washington, so.
Yeah. Like, the game-winning touchdown against Oregon the first time, we were not in the red zone. We went 2 plays and Rome just said, my ball.
So I'm going to go 41 dogs, 27. Michigan.
Okay.
Also a 21 point or a 14 point.
Give each team a 6 more. All right.
Yeah.
I don't predict blowouts this year. I just, until we do it, I won't. I think this one ends.
That's believable.
I think in a similar fashion. I think that. Actually, I think in some ways, I think we actually contain them on a couple of their red zone trips. And we put up, it just comes to efficiency, or maybe we're not in the red zone quite as often, but Mike finds Rome, Jalen, JP, Dev, Westy from somewhere farther out than 20 yards a couple of times. This one is, I would say that this is probably the one that I worry about the most, just because, you know, it's a Styles Make Fights game. More than I worried about Oregon, more than I worried about Texas. It's a very good football team we're playing, but we're getting it done.
That's weird. I feel more confident about this game than I did about Texas, or I did about the conference championship game.
Yeah, I felt like UW fans are saying they were worried about Texas over the other 2 teams, Michigan and Alabama. I was pretty confident going into the Oregon games this year. I wasn't really super worried. And then I wasn't really worried about this Texas game either for some weird reason.
I think what I will say and what I was on the verge of saying a couple of times last week was that I think the winner of the Sugar Bowl was going to win the national championship. I think if Texas had won that game, they win. I think we win.
I didn't love the matchup for us against Alabama, though.
Exactly. Jalen Milroe and his ability, like the combination of his mobility and his ability to just bomb the ball down the field.
Yeah, mobile quarterbacks have been a thorn in our side a bit this year.
That game, I could have what Milroe presents as a matchup problem, and with the talent that they have in the secondary. Like, Michigan is a better, probably a little bit better run defense than a pass defense. Alabama's a better pass, or at least between the two, Alabama has a better talent, better and more talented, has the athletes to run with us and cause our receivers more problems.
Yeah, they're the only team that even really had a shot to slow down the receiving game.
But I mean, like, you're not gonna worry about that. That's no disrespect. Like, Mikey Sanders still is a hell of a player. Like, that kid can play, but they're not the. And I think the underrated element of this game, and we're kind of going past even our predictions. I think one of the things, and I'll shout out to Hood for pointing it out, I think on our last pod and in a couple of tweets, experience in games matters. And we have, I think, just under 10 players that are six-year, like including like eight or nine guys that are sixth-year players in our program. Mike's 24. Like, we have some very experienced football players, and that matters. Michigan's been here before, or they haven't been to the national championship game, but they've been to the playoffs before.
Three straight years.
But I think we've got enough to get it done.
The fact that we've played all of our games close, that's got to, like, if this is a close game, that's got to help us. And that,
it's not
like
luck.
The nerves.
We're unflappable. Point. Like, yeah,
right.
There's no scenario that we haven't seen at this point. We were down against Arizona State late, and our offense was playing like dog shit, and we got saved by a pick six.
Niche.
Yeah. I mean, there's no scenario that could happen in this game that we haven't seen shy of getting blown out.
But we've seen that
and
too.
This team will. Well, we haven't gone down big all
Not
year.
Not this year.
Well, yeah.
We were down big to UCLA last year, and how That's did true. That game finish?
Yeah.
But some of that Close. Was self-inflicted wounds. But right. How did that finish?
Right.
And I'm sorry, you don't. J.J. McCarthy is not what Michigan's
Dorian Thompson Robinson
is not. Yeah, J.J. McCarthy is not Dorian Thompson Robinson, and Michigan's receivers are not what UCLA had at receiver last year in that scheme with Michigan's a better running game than UCLA had last year. They don't have the same kind of passing game or the same kind of passing built off of that running game like UCLA did. Granted, they have a better defense. Like, that's not necessarily a game I want to comp to, but this team has been down big, like, and fights back. Like,
it's true.
Yeah, so like, if it's a close game and they have to go down, I mean, what's JJ gonna do? Like, has he been in big close games before?
I mean, he just was a couple days ago.
Right. But I mean, they handed it off to Corum. Corum did that. I mean, I don't know.
On a screen and on a screen, the big play that gave them back the lead or helped them tie it up was a Corum screen.
Oh, okay. I didn't watch that game. I was out playing baseball.
Where it was like a flat pass, and then Corum had the run in overtime, and then the defense buckled down.
So it was a check down.
And Burton got hurt on the play before the fork down where Melrose scrambled.
Yeah, that's a big deal when your wide receiver one goes down.
Yep. Well, unless you're
Washington.
Yep. I don't want anybody on this team to get hurt, obviously, but
please God,
let's
praying
go.
For health.
All right. All right, we'll be back later this week with another episode, this time hosted by our buddy Hood Husky. Thanks for listening. Go Dogs, bring home that natty.
Go Dogs.
Get home.
You can support this podcast at podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/soundthesirenpod/UW/support. Thanks. Go Dogs.